Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the very, very bitterly cold New York. Sean Palmer, along with my co-host Seth Kanan. I have to say, 24 hours ago, I was in sunny Florida, and it was so much nicer than here in New York. But here I am for yet another week of the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show.
Womp, womp.
It does happen from time to time that I get some, I don't know, sympathy. Tonight is obviously not one of those. Not at all, huh? Not with my can and my... I got a little can.
You're like an albino.
I know, but I got a little bit. I got a little bit. Anyway, so we're in a mourning period for several teams this week. Those Atlanta Falcons and Tony Gonzalez, sad to see you go. Those New England Patriots, very happy to see you go. If you haven't been a listener to the show, the New York Jets' second season just ended. Our first season was when we rooted for the playoffs, and then obviously Jets just end the season, continued to root against the Patriots, and now the Patriots have gone away. So we're going to talk about the NFL first. We'll get on to Lance Armstrong, Monte Teo, a little bit NBA, but first, I will introduce my co-host to say something in the first 4 minutes of the show.
That's so nice of you. For those of you who are listening, to listen to Jared Rowling from ESPN.com, this is actually a bit of a bait and switch. He called me at 6:30. He's still in Knicks practice. He's going to come on next week and sends his apologies out to the masses. I'd like to pat myself on the back for beating you once again in picks, taking the Niners over Atlanta and taking Baltimore over New England. Going to 2-0. You beat me in baseball. I've beaten you in football, and you beat me, I think, in the drafts.
Yeah, but you know, the most important thing will happen in March when the Cuse are going to beat Maryland all over the place. So it won't really matter.
Let's hope we make it there. A strange week in sports. Not a particularly happy one. We have two inspirational characters going down in flames, both literally and figuratively. A couple deaths. And so to start with something, and actually a little bit of a controversy that was started on my Facebook, which I'll address with Sean a little bit later. Let's talk a little football. So,
for Boston, the outhouse on the hill. For Boston, they suck and always will. So here's the outhouse on the hill. New England sucks and always will. For Boston, the outhouse on the hill. I'm not too bitter a Jets fan, am I?
No, and you're not too much of a singer either.
Well, we know that, but you can catch me at karaoke on Keats at 45th and 2nd. Every once in a while, I'll be there.
Yeah, we got one in a couple weeks, actually.
We do.
Fink.
Oh, that's right. That's right. We have the Fink Party of the Year, and perhaps we'll be doing another one for my birthday, but we'll see. Anyway, so New England goes down in flames, and the controversy that Seth brings up on his Facebook was somebody asked Seth, who is not a very big proponent of Senor Joe Flacco, as to whether he is an elite quarterback, whether Seth owed the supporters of Joe Flacco an apology, and my view is that he doesn't. I mean, really? Joe Flacco has played like an elite quarterback for a couple of weeks. There's no doubt about that. That throw on 3rd and 13 from the end zone was an elite throw in this league. But he's not an elite quarterback until you prove it over the course of more than three games.
He didn't look good against Houston.
Okay.
I mean, against Indianapolis, number one. Number two, if they don't complete that ridiculous pass to Jacoby Jones, which if Raheem Moore didn't make the worst defensive play possibly in the last 20 years, we're not even having this discussion.
Great.
And as you guys know, when it comes to anything stringent, when it comes to elite, Hall of Fame, things along those lines, I'm not one of those people who thinks everybody's elite. I don't think everyone belongs in the Hall of Fame. You know, when I think of elite quarterbacks, there's only three or four.
Yeah, I think that's what we said. There are probably just the Breeze, the Manning, the Brady, and the Rodgers. So we got four.
And number five would be Roethlisberger. And then, you know, then you have this next tier of Eli. I wouldn't.
Philip Rivers?
Not right, not anymore. Maybe.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Are you elite today or are you an elite quarterback Because I'll tell you right now, Drew Brees did not play like an elite quarterback this year, and Tom Brady in these playoffs did not play like an elite quarterback.
Well, and then, I mean, the way I almost look at it is, who would you, you know, when you go through the 32 teams, who would you rather have? I mean, is he one of the top four quarterbacks you'd rather have? Not even in the ballpark for me. I would rather have Luck. I'd rather have RG3. You know, possibly Cam, possibly Russell Wilson.
Well, are you looking on a one-game basis, or are you looking for the next 5 years? Because then you bring in contracts, too.
Right. I'm not talking spoken like a true capologist. I'm not talking from a capologist standpoint. But I'm also not looking at it from a single-game standpoint as well.
So you're looking for the 2013-2014 season, who do I want?
Yeah, that's how
okay. I don't think I want RG3 over him just for injury circumstances.
Fair.
I think that's a – I want Colin Kaepernick over him.
Fair.
I think Colin Kaepernick has definitely justified what Jim Harbaugh did. I think no more than seeing him in the Super Bowl. I mean, and we'll get to our Super Bowl pick probably next week. We'll evaluate the Super Bowl because we have a lot to talk about. But what did you think about Ray Lewis? I mean, another masterful game, but I think that the Patriots kind of played right into that game.
It was just – I don't know – they just looked flat. They at the end of, when it was all said and done, they just looked flat.
I think they played basically the same game plan as the Denver Broncos did. And to tell you the truth, that's a team that basically went over the middle all the time. They ran short passes and short runs, and you played right into the middle. Right into what the Patriots wanted, what the Ravens wanted you to do. I mean, you basically had a short passing game, and Ray Lewis was able to capitalize on that.
Well, going forward, but yes, as you know, the offense did look sharp, or looked sharp enough against a mediocre New England defense, and you know, Baltimore holding them to 13 points, none in the second half. You know, says quite a bit. It certainly wasn't the most exciting game of the afternoon, but you know, credit to Baltimore for going to New England, and you know, doing. I don't think anyone thought it would be that convincing. And I'll tell you something. Talk about someone who's been underrated for years. How good has Anquan Boldin been in these playoffs?
Well, he's been fantastic. I mean, he's been the best he's been the best wide receiver in the playoffs, bar none. And he's justified himself as one of those top wide receivers. I'll tell you one thing, looking at that game, how disappointing was Brandon Lloyd? I mean, you bring in Brandon Lloyd to stretch the field, and they didn't go vertical very often in that game at all.
No. And that would be something you would think that they would try and take advantage of. Baltimore's strength is not their secondary. But – you know?
And we got an interesting question from one of our listeners, Mark Rubin, down in D.C., who is in mourning, Mark being a tried and true Patriots fan. And the question is, how do the Patriots reload for next year? And I think that's going to be quite a quandary. I mean, every team has a year or two where they have to bite the bullet on the salary cap. You can keep pushing and pushing and pushing all those salaries, but sooner or later you have to make those tough choices. And those tough choices for the Patriots are coming due this year. You have Wes Welker, who is coming, who, if they franchise him again, is an $11.4 million hit. Now, let's understand this, and I know Seth doesn't go into the cap very much, but that's my strong point, at least on this show, is that the Patriots have about $20 million right now under the cap for next year. And they can certainly maneuver some of that, especially since Tom Brady is earning $22 million under that same cap, the cap being $120 next year. It's probably not going to move. So you got $20 million. You have significant free agents this year. You have Wes Welker. You have Julian Edelman, who supposedly is the next Wes Welker. Well, he's a free agent, too. You also have Sebastian Vollmer, who's your right tackle. He's a free agent. Patrick Chung, depth on the secondary, is a free agent. You notice how these are linemen. You have a couple of other reserve linemen that are free agents. And I know what you want to say is, let's go sign Welker. Let's sign Edelman. Let's sign everybody. And then we'll go out and get some free agents to patch it up. Well, I think, you know what, it's coming due for Bill Belichick, all his bad drafts. I mean, he tried to draft the defensive lineman Ron Brace earlier. And it just didn't pan out for them. And if you don't have those rookie contracts under the cap, you're going to have some very, very, very old players. Look at Pittsburgh this year. Pittsburgh suffered greatly because of their lack of a good draft. So I think that that's going to be a problem.
I also think Pittsburgh is a bit of an anomaly because you had the, you know, all their offensive line got destroyed in DeCastro, who was a first round pick. Was injured for most of the year, number one, number two didn't develop. But I think you're right. New England, for some reason, has been unable to build a secondary. And, you know, they let Asante Samuel go, obviously, several years back. For some reason, with last picks they've used, I mean, Devin McCourty was good for a little while. Now he's removed to safety. Brandon Merriweather had a year or two and then fizzled out. The Belichick magic on the secondary just hasn't really...
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting because the guy that was able to... Everybody gives a whole lot of credit to Bill Belichick. Is it possible that it's not only Belichick? I mean, this team has had a significant decline since Scott Pioli left. And Scott Pioli is now, quote, a free agent under the market. I think it's quite ironic that New England released Floyd Reese, who was signed as, you're going to say, a free agent, but like a general manager, director of player development. He was signed once Pioli left. Well, now Pioli's been fired by Kansas City, and ironically, Floyd Reese's contract wasn't renewed. I can definitely, in fact, I'd stake a whole lot of money on seeing Scott Pioli return to the Patriots.
I should say, if anyone wants to call in and talk about this, 760-283-0846, and this will be a fun little hour to talk about football. Going to the other game, we received a whole lot of grief from our fan base a little bit further south in Atlanta after they blew a huge lead to Seattle and came back and won 34-8 on a last-second field goal by Matt Bryan. And they were supposed to move forward. And, you know, both Sean and I took San Francisco. And here it was again, up 17-0, cruising. Julio Jones looking like the number five pick in the draft, worth making all those draft picks for. And their offense just went absolutely nowhere in the second half.
Well, their offense lost a lot when Michael Turner got hurt. And you can say a lot about Jaquez Rodgers or Jason Snelling, but they're not Michael Turner. Michael Turner, while has been vilified, I guess is a good word, especially amongst fantasy players, in the fact that he doesn't score touchdowns and doesn't break those big yardage gains. He does break tackles. He does keep the chains moving. And he was a necessity in this game. And he went out with an injury in that third quarter, and they just stopped moving the ball. When you can go into a one-system attack, look, the Jets stunk this year. But you knew why they stunk, because they couldn't run the ball or they couldn't throw the ball. It was one of the two every single game. When you have a one-sided offense, it's either throwing or running, you can put a system in there with no problem. So I think you had a big problem when Michael Turner went out. I think Jaquez Rodgers proved again that he is not an everyday back. We know Jason Snelling isn't an everyday back, and they had problems. The one guy that I feel the worst for, that's Tony G, Tony Gonzalez. Maybe he walks away after this year. In fact, he said it's a 95% chance that he walks away after this year. He's a Hall of Famer, never got to a Super Bowl, but a Super Bowl is in the picture for at least one other Hall of Famer, Ray Lewis.
Well, actually, and for another one that you didn't mention, the backup receiver for San Francisco gets his second chance at a redemption in a Super Bowl, Randy Moss. But what was so amazing to me about Gonzalez's career, no one's ever considered Tony Gonzalez underrated, but the reality is he probably is. You look at his statistics, and I don't have them open right now, but I believe he has almost 400 more catches than any other tight end, 4,000 more yards, 20 more touchdowns. These aren't Hall of Fame tight end numbers. These are Hall of Fame wide receiver numbers.
Well, he's second in NFL history in catches behind Jerry Rice. That's enough. Now, I think the best thing about Tony Gonzalez is the humility that this man has. I mean, he came out, for those that don't remember, he came out of Cal as a guy that played basketball. He was a power forward on the back on the I think the Final Four team.
Yeah,
no, they didn't make
the
a Final Four.
Final Eight in North Carolina.
Final Eight team. He was the power forward on that team, and all he said was, "I just want to be a decent NFL tight end." He never thought he said this in interviews. He never thought he was great. Well, Tony Gonzalez, you may be the best pass catching tight end of all time. I mean, when it's all said and done, Jason Witten will have to catch 100 balls for like the next 7 years. A 100 balls for the next 5 years in order to get there. It's not going to happen, even in this passing offense. And remember, Tony Gonzalez didn't play with the greatest of teams either. I mean, he was on Kansas City. He played with some pretty bad Kansas City teams, which led him to go to Atlanta.
He played with some good KC teams, but yeah, for the most part, they were relatively mediocre. And then he went to Atlanta, and obviously, I mean, he may have even led the league in catches a year or two ago, I forget. But, you know, they've had Roddy White, who's been a top 10 wideout. They've had Julio Jones, who's now, along with A.J. Green, the next, you know, the top of the next generation of wideouts. And he just never seems to get lost in the shuffle. You know, he still gets his 70, 80, 90 catches. And, you know, he seems relatively healthy. It's a shame he's going to do this because this team, I think, will be a threat next year. I think everyone assumes that. But, you know, he's 35 years old. If his body is saying it's time, then it's time. And you wish him the best of luck.
Good for him. I mean, there are many, many NFL players that don't know when to walk away. Good for him that he's saying this is it. I mean, he says he's 95 to 97%. I mean, we've all seen the Brett Favre 95 to 97%, but this doesn't sound like it is. It's Brett Favre. I mean, I think he's done.
Well, the one other thing we should give him credit for is starting this generational move of these power forwards, small forwards from the NBA coming in, you know, taking their chances in the NFL. You know, the most popular one being Antonio Gates in San Diego, who was a power forward at Kent State, leading them, ironically, to a top eight, to a final eight finish, and then becoming at one point the best tight end in football. And this is, you know, this trend was started looking for the athletic forwards to become these tight ends was started by Tony Gonzalez.
Absolutely, and Jimmy Graham has followed that suit as well, where he played basketball at Miami. So I mean, this is not going to be a trend that stops. These guys are 6'6", 6'7". I mean, I once said that Charles Oakley would have been the best tight end in football had he been able to catch the ball. But
I think he would have just been the scariest tight end in football.
Well, he couldn't catch a basketball, so what makes you think he could have caught a football? Anyway, that being said, so moving on to give some credit where credit is due to those San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh, I mean, you made a choice about 6 weeks ago, 6-7 weeks ago, to replace your starter, who was 10-1, with a rookie, Colin Kaepernick, out of Nevada. Really? What everybody said? And I think both Seth and I, we justified the move. We said that it was a good move because you knew what you had in Alex Smith, and Jim Harbaugh didn't think he could get to that big game. Well, guess what? Kudos to you, Jim Harbaugh. Your word, absolutely proved prophetic. You are in the Super Bowl with a rookie quarterback, and I think second-year quarterback, excuse me, and I think it will be even more interesting if he wins the Super Bowl because he will be the first Super Bowl winner with that running quarterback style. We haven't seen one yet.
You mean Jeff Hostetler doesn't count?
Jeff Hostetler was a runner that happened to throw. Colin Kaepernick has a gun for an arm.
Yes, he does.
I mean, he is an absolute beast in every sense of the word except for that he's human. And
really?
Yeah, oh, I had to go there. You don't want to go that route. Yeah, I agreed, but you don't want to go that route. So congratulations to the San Francisco 49ers. We'll certainly be talking more about them next week when we go into our Super Bowl preview. Just an absolutely great weekend of football. I mean, I didn't get to see all of both of the games, but this is what we were waiting for, and I can say that we have the two best teams in the NFL that have played over the last 5 weeks. The last 5 weeks, these are the two best teams in the NFL. They may not have been over the course of the entire year, but that's why you play an entire year, to get to where you were.
Actually, I don't know about that. I would not have particularly liked San Francisco's chances if they were playing Seattle, even at home. But, you know, that being said, it's not much of an argument. one thing I don't really want to dwell on because, to be honest, I don't care, and you can watch it on SportsCenter for the next few weeks, probably 120 hours a day, is the Harbaugh brothers versus each other. It's great. I don't care. It means nothing to me.
Calling Jack Harbaugh, can I see your family photos, please?
So, getting off of football, everything outside of football, to be honest, has been relatively depressing this week, starting with Lance Armstrong and his 47-hour extravaganza with Oprah Winfrey, which I was shocked to – I never really thought of Oprah Winfrey. I never really talked about Oprah Winfrey, to be honest. And I, to be fair, I only saw the first hour and a half of the interview. Damn, DVR.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very sympathetic figure that has never watched Oprah, Seth Kamens. He's not sensitive. He doesn't have the gentlemanly skills to tap into the woman's sensitivity watching Oprah every day. I know that you wish that he would come home and watch the O, but that's just not him.
No. I just can't reach that emotional. I just can't reach it.
Ladies and gentlemen, our emotional wheel here at the Seth and Sean Sports. Sensitivity, not one of his greatest strong points. Anyway, moving on.
Anyway.
Armstrong, do you believe what he said? I think that's the big thing right now. Do you believe what he said?
I don't believe he was a cog in the machine. I believe he was the machine. You know, that he admitted it is fine and great and dandy, but at the end of the day, he ruined people's lives doing it. It's one thing, you know, commit. You know, you're kicking this and that and the other thing because everyone else is. It's another thing pretty much ruining people's lives if they get in your way of doing so.
There are two big problems I have with his confession. And first of all, the fact that he did all this crap is nauseating to me. But let's look at how this is different. And I've heard people say this is the same as Pete Rose. He finally came out when it was good for him because the statute of limitations was over, blah, 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 blah. Okay, this is much different than Pete Rose. Okay, let's understand this. Pete Rose bet on baseball. He admitted it when it was good for him. Lance Armstrong took PEDs. You know what? That is the only thing that is the same about them. They came out when it was beneficial to them. But I'll tell you one thing. Pete Rose, when people said you cheated on baseball, he never sued them for defamation. He never said, I'm going to sue you because you're wrong. He never called anybody a skank or a liar. He just defended himself. He said, I did not bet on baseball throughout. And then he admitted he did. Okay, so he's a liar. Great. Lance is a liar, too. But he sued people for defamation of character. Defamation of character, one of the absolute truths, one of the absolute defenses to defamation of character is the truth. Well, guess what? To all those people that had to hire lawyers because Lance Armstrong sued them and are out $100,000, $200,000, $1 million, you should be lining up to sue this man. Lining up. And this is where it becomes interesting. And this is legal analyst Sean Palmer in my alternative.
He's a capologist, he's a sports expert, and legal analyst. I'm lucky. My God, what do I bring to the party?
You bring the business transactional sense and the money. So anyway, he pays for it. So, but here's the big thing. Statute of limitations, which I believe Seth knows all about, that as to what it is.
Hey, okay.
Well, you know what it is.
Yeah,
Statute of limitations means that after a certain period of time, nobody can sue you based on your actions. So there are certain crimes, such as murder, which have no statute of limitations. But if you embezzled something 6 years ago, you cannot be sued today. You can be sued criminally, maybe. You definitely cannot be sued civilly. So, why is this important? Because the 8-year statute of limitations on Lance Armstrong's, quote, PED use just expired. How convenient is that? So, of course, he's going to come out now because nobody can sue him. What I found ironic was when Oprah said, did you take PEDs during your comeback in 2008 and 2009, he denied it. That, to me, is the biggest lie of all. Because I'm telling you now, I don't know anybody that could just turn that crap off. If you're a winner, the way he says, I'm a winner, and I was caught up in the culture, well, guess what? The culture still existed in 2008 and 2009. And the reason he's not admitting to that is because the statute of limitations has not expired on those.
Well, I just kind of smile and think about it in general because my former best friend for years used to ask me about whether I thought he was guilty, and my response was always the same. It was not a doubt in my mind it was. And he was half serious, half kidding, would always say, he goes, well, you're just not an American. Well, that may be true, but, you know, it doesn't change the fact that I thought he was guilty. Now, it is what it is. I don't think anyone who follows the sport is shocked. Anyone who follows sports isn't shocked. You knew it was true. You didn't know if it was going to come out at some point or not. You know, and the statute of limitations just made all the sense in the world on the timing sense. But it does also explain, because this was something I was not aware of, on why he came out now. And about the 8 years of statutes, I didn't realize. But what I said this last week, I believe the last 21 people who were in the top three in the Tour de France, I believe 18 of them have been indicted. Have been caught for some kind of drug use. Before it's a joke.
Does this bring to the table more that Greg LeMond was a great cyclist? I mean, I think his reputation was totally ruined by Lance.
It was.
And I think that this should bring him back to the forefront, especially of American cycling, if not of every other country as well. I mean,
he is the last winner where there is no question, there has never been a thought process on, but the reality is he's also 55 years old at this point. I'm not sure anyone cares.
Well, do people not care because the sport is so tainted?
I think people don't care, number one, because it's cycling. I think number two, people don't care because it's so tainted. I think the combination of the two makes it practically makes him pretty much a foregone figure, a forlorn figure in the history of cycling. And it's a shame.
You will get absolutely no argument from me. I mean, speaking of a shame, we're going to switch a little bit over to baseball. Stan the Man, most underappreciated baseball player in Major League history, no doubt, passed away this week. All the tributes hold nothing to what he did. And I just want to spend a couple of minutes. I think that he was underrated. I think if anybody exemplified the way that sports should be, especially since we're just coming off talking about PED use and Lance Armstrong and the lying and the cheating and everything else, and we do have to get onto Monte Teo as well, we should at least, I wouldn't say glorify, but we should bring to the attention the good in sports as well as the bad, because it's not all bad. I mean, we have to pay homage, I think is a better way of saying it, to Stan Musial, who was, for all intents and purposes, nobody had a bad word to say about this man.
Stan Musial was probably, prior to Willie Mays, the greatest National League player of all time. Spent 20-some-odd years with St. Louis, I think 22, 23, I think it was an all-star, 18 of them. You know, 3,600 hits, 400 home runs. I'm approximating. I don't have the numbers in front of me. But he was one of the few people who really lived up to what you wanted a hero to be. You know, clean-cut guy, never got traded, never left anywhere. Of course, that was a little bit more of the generational. You didn't see too many people leaving as much in the 50s. But, I mean, Willie Mays made comments that, you know, during during the issues with race in the National League over the 40s and 50s, he was one of the stalwarts, you know, trying to help Hank Aaron and Willie and, you know, kind of always kind of promoting them and, you know, really making efforts beyond what was necessary.
Well, Willie Mays, just to bring up that Willie Mays comment, Willie Mays told a story, it was echoed in many papers, that in the first All-Star game that Willie Mays and Hank Aaron were allowed into, the African-Americans were in the back of the clubhouse playing cards. They were playing poker. And the Caucasians, or whites, were in the front, and they were segregating themselves. Stan Musial went right up to the poker table, sat down, and said, deal me in. What nobody understood was that Sam Musial didn't know how to play poker. But he just sat there and played, or tried to play, and lost all his money. Just to prove a point that these players were no different than anybody else. And that, to me, is as big a respectful thing as you can do. Pee Wee Reese, it goes right along with Pee Wee Reese putting his arm around Jackie Robinson. And we'll see in the movie 42 that is soon to come out. And we'll talk about that. Hopefully we'll get somebody from the movie on the show. How important that was. I mean, today you see racial problems. But I am very happy that I live in a society today as opposed to a society in the 1940s and 50s or before that, where race was such a big problem. And for athletes such as Stan Musial, you tipped your cap to them because they're the ones that made it the way that it is today. The most impressive record, and Stan Musial held a lot of records, the most impressive record that Stan Musial had was the one that was not on the baseball field. Stan Musial was married to the same woman for 71 years. That is...
I'm trying to think if I've ever been with anyone for 71 days. I can't put that in.
I have no comment on that. None whatsoever. But if you'd like to call in and talk to Seth for 71 seconds, 760-283-0846.
What a fantastic segue that was. Jeez. Well, one other sad acknowledgement in the baseball world. Earl Weaver also died on Sunday. The ex-feisty manager of the Baltimore Orioles, leading them, I believe, to the World Series in 83.
No, he was not on the 83 team.
Was Antebelli the coach in 83?
Antebelli. He coached them in the 1970 World Series when they won against the Pirates.
No, was it the Pirates or the Reds? They beat the Reds. 71, they lost to the Pirates.
You're right. I'm sorry, 70.
Yep.
You're right. 69, they lost to the Mets. But he had the 70 team that had Pat Dobson, Mike Queller, Jim Palmer, yeah.
And what's famous from that one is the Brooks Robinson possibly making the greatest defensive play in the history of Major League Baseball on the ground ball, I think, by Johnny Bench. He was flashy, he was feisty, he was loud, and he was a great. And you know, his teams went to 3 World Series in the 70s.
And he's a Hall of Famer. And you know the most incredible thing about Earl Weaver?
I don't.
Was Earl Weaver retired when he was 56 years old. He hasn't coached a game in over 20 years. He hasn't managed a game in over 20 years, which I find incredible. Because today's managers start at 56. Ned Yost and Ron Renicki, who were both rookie managers, started their careers at 54 and 56, and Earl Weaver retired at 56. It's a sign of the times. I mean, Mike Matheny is – I think the difference is back then you didn't have to play to manage, and today it seems like you just do. So Earl Weaver, you know, great, obviously a great manager. It took way too long for him to get into the Hall of Fame, which was just a couple of years ago. But I like that he actually lived to see himself in the Hall of Fame, unlike Marvin Miller, who got honored last night. He passed away this year as well, and he'll be hopefully inducted next year. I mean, the Veterans Committee will see him next year. Marvin Miller, the ex-head of the union, and deserves to be in the Hall of Fame as well.
Well, from the sad in one sense to the absolute sad in the other, they're really – very rarely do you see a sports story where everyone you know, casual fans, sports expert, everyone in between, all says the same thing. What the beep? And I have never seen more people say that than on Wednesday night trying to figure out what exactly happened with Monte Teo. To this day, it's still the most confusing thing, one of the most confusing things I've ever heard. We're talking to guys I do the sports TV show with, to people who don't follow football for the life of them, to people who didn't know Notre Dame had a football team, although I'm not really sure who that would be. But everyone on my Facebook, exact same thing, WTF. And I had no response. It's the silliest thing I've ever heard. Either, you know, I know Jeremy Schapp from ESPN did a 3-hour interview, give or take, with him, and he's convinced that he's, you know, didn't know anything. But, I mean, how do you look at this? To me, there's only three things. Number one, he's a complete liar, and he's a publicity whore. And, you know, a couple teammates attested to the latter part of that. Number two, he's an absolute and utter idiot and rube, whatever word you want to use. And or number three, and this is the more controversial one, you know, is it a cover for something? You know, you can kind of insinuate, I don't think I need to really spell that out, but I'm not quite sure if we're allowed to discuss this on the radio.
We can discuss whatever we want on the radio. I mean, I think the question is, A, is it even fair to go to that third point? And what we're saying is it a cover for the fact that he's Mormon, he went to a Catholic school, and that there is the rumor that he purported this whole cover-up to cover up the fact that he was a homosexual? I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. That is something that's out there. That's something that people are talking about. And who cares if that's the case?
Well, I think that's easier said than done. In any other aspect of life, yes, who cares? But in sports, we've never had a gay athlete in the prime of their career come out. And this guy's not even in the prime of his career. This guy would be a rookie coming into the NFL. As a middle linebacker, where you're supposed to be the leader of the defense, I think it would be extraordinarily tough for someone of this in this situation to be the first person to come out of the closet.
I agree with you. I totally agree.
I think you'd be better off someone who's an established star. And we all know that there are established stars who are gay in the major sports. We don't know who they are because, to be honest, we don't care. I mean, I don't care. But I think this would be an extraordinarily tough situation for him. I don't really know which of the three it is. I find it incredible to believe that someone could be this stupid.
Let's back up a bit. Seth, you and I are both 36 years old.
Sure.
Right? Monte Teo, regardless of the fact that he's a middle linebacker on the number what, 3 team in the nation now?
On a good day.
Okay. Thank you. Obviously not the biggest of Notre Dame fans are Seth Kamens. But say the number one team in the nation over the course of the year. He's still 22. He's still young. I mean, I know that we hold up our athletes to be these extraordinary figures that are smarter, that are bigger, that are better. And I once thought about it, I'm like, I'm older than the majority of major league athletes. I am. But I still look at them and say, come on, David. Like, they're such – David Wright, like, he's older than me and bigger than me and better than me. He's earning more money than me. That's certainly true and probably will forever. But there's still – when you're 22 or you're Michael Carter Williams, who I hold dear to my heart because he's the Syracuse point guard who's 20 years old, he's still 20. These are still kids, and I don't care what publicity machine you have, Notre Dame, Syracuse, New York Mets. Kids do stupid things. Kids lie. This is just an instance where he got caught up in a lie and didn't know how to handle it.
That could be true. And I think that's incredibly stupid.
Is it stupid or
that
naive?
I was actually going in the other direction. I was saying if he didn't realize, considering this isn't a 1 week or 1 month thing, how long is this going on? Years? You know, you've never met the person after years? Never seen them after years? I think that's ridiculous.
Right. But in today's society, with the internet the way that it is, it's certainly possible. In fact, it's likely that this happens on an everyday basis.
But you date, you supposedly are in a relationship with a girl for years and never saw them?
Let's understand what the... Okay, we use the term relationship, and we have a definition of it. Do I think that Montesano took this way too far in the term of what girlfriend could be? Yes. But is it possible? Sure. I think in today's society, with the way that the internet works, you can have that type of whatever you want to call it. Friendship.
Yeah, but this
acquaintanceship. I mean, did he take it to an nth degree? Yes. Is that part of what a person could misinterpret? Yes. Is he 21, 22 years old where feelings are a little different and he's not as mature? Yes. Am I defending what happened? No. Am I trying to find a way that it could be plausible? Absolutely. I think when you're 20 years old, you deserve the benefit of the doubt.
Well, I guess as a friendship, yes. You know, my writers from Back Sports page, I've never met a single one of them in person. I've talked
Thanks.
To, except for Sean.
Standing in the next room.
Yeah, well, you're barely a writer for us. You know,
but I'm a good one.
When you choose to be. But, you know, most of our writers, our best writers, Nick Singleton in Chicago. Actually, I have met Nick in person once before. Keegan Reed is in Montreal. Asa Beale in San Francisco. You know, these are friendships, acquaintances, people I work with. So, yeah, I've never met them in person, but, you know, that's fine. But I am not in supposedly some kind of formal dating relationship, which was the impression that he gave to everyone. And that, to me, would be unacceptable. Now, do I care? Not particularly. I mean, when it's all said and done, the only way would be I would really care one way or the other is if he is gay and this is the cover, and I would only care about that in regards to the fact that he'll be the first, as we said, the first, you know, major rookie young player coming out admitting this prior to going pro. I'm very curious to see how the NFL is going to grade this, though, because this is a character. Supposedly, one of the things that Monte Chow brings to the table as a top 5, top 10, top 15 pick is his character and his leadership. This doesn't really lend well to either of those. I am curious to see how far he drops based on this.
Okay, so he's got 6 months to rehabilitate, 5 months to rehabilitate this. First of all, is it rehabilitatable, if that's even a word? Number two, what would it take? And number three, I think the worst move he made would say that his performance wasn't affected at all by that, what was it? They were in the Sugar Bowl?
No, they were in the national title game.
Right, but which bowl game?
It wasn't a bowl game. It's just a national title game.
Oh, the national title game. Because if I'm him, I totally think that affected me. I totally use that as an excuse and say that this was a problem. And I think that his stock goes down more because of that game than it does for anything else. I mean, he played an atrocious game.
Yeah, but I think how much of what happened was based upon, you know, they obviously, Notre Dame found out about this earlier. So he already knew that this whole thing was kind of going down when the game was played a week and a half later. How much of an impact did that have on the game? I don't know if it had any. But yeah, certainly the Notre Dame abomination, but that. Notre Dame, Alabama embarrassment, you know, was what it was. We'll see. You know, at best, it's still a huge scar on the most inspirational college football player this year.
Again, and you're absolutely right. And we will be talking NFL draft as it comes closer in April. And I'm sure while Seth did beat me in the NFL picks, I'll have my retribution. Come time for the NFL draft.
I have no doubt.
Yeah, we know. Anyway, moving on to the NBA, and quite frankly, we don't have a whole lot to talk about in the NBA because, you know what, it's just not that interesting, at least right now. We have some, the All-Star break is coming up. Woohoo. The Knicks and playing the Nets for, it seems like, what, the 30th time this year?
Yeah, no more this year. Thank God.
Is it over?
It's over.
Is that it? Thankfully. But the Nets did put up a little fight, and they did win a game. But is this season pretty much playing out the way that you thought? I mean, other than the disarray in L.A.?
Well, considering I had L.A. in the finals, no, not particularly. I didn't see Boston falling this far back. I didn't see Andrew Bynum not playing a single game and not seeming to care one way or the other. I didn't see the Clippers at this good, although I thought they would be solid. I didn't see myself being forced to root for the Milwaukee Bucks, nor would I ever want to.
And we may see a trade for the Milwaukee Bucks real soon. So.
And most impressively, did anyone see Golden State being on 50-win pace at this point?
Without Andrew Bogut.
Yes. But, yeah, for the most part, the East is Miami until it's not. And the West, you have you have Oklahoma, you have San Antonio, you have the Clippers. And you still have these teams that are going to be bothersome in Memphis and Denver. So it's just very hard to get that excited. You know, as we've discussed before, it's very difficult for me to get that excited about a midseason Kings Lakers game.
But could you get excited for a Seattle Supersonics Lakers game?
Probably not. But I am quite happy to see them coming back, to see Seattle getting a team.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit, because here we are with we know that the Sacramento Kings have been bought in principle by, I think his name is Hansen, but I can't, Chris Hansen. And
the guy from To Catch a Predator?
I don't think so. Anyway, I just gave Seth a really weird look. But I don't think, so moving to Seattle, supposedly, this has to go through a couple of hurdles first, including the Board of Governors, which Kevin Johnson, the mayor of Sacramento, and if you haven't heard who he is the former point guard of the Phoenix Suns and Cleveland Cavaliers, who is now the mayor of Sacramento, will put up his last-ditch effort to keep the team. Then they're going to move to Seattle. So the Seattle Supersonics, formerly the Sacramento Kings, the Oklahoma City Thunder, formerly the Sacramento Seattle Supersonics, and we have a cluster, insert four-letter word right here, as to how the history is going to be since the Seattle Supersonics history books have now moved to Oklahoma City. So it's kind of like in baseball with the Seattle Pilots or the Texas Rangers, who were once the Washington Senators, but so were the Minnesota Twins.
Huh?
Oh, you don't know that,
yes,
do you?
Yes, I do. I'm just saying that for you, yes.
But I'm just, it's a whole lot of maneuvering. And what do you say to Sacramento now? I mean, first of all, the Maloof screwed you over. You can say that up front. Gavin and, what's the other guy, Joe? Joe Maloof?
Yeah.
Gavin and Joe Maloof are complete and total, into a three-letter word, holes. And they screwed over what they referred to as their town, Sacramento. So now the Cincinnati Royals, which became the Kansas City Kings, which became the Sacramento Kings, are now going to be the Seattle Supersonics. Got all that?
I think I needed a leave.
You got a headache this big, and we don't take sponsorships.
Well,
actually, we do. If you'd like to sponsor the Seth and Sean Show, please call Seth Kamens at 760-283-0846 while we're having the show.
Much better. I'm glad to see you've learned your lesson from last time.
Anyway, so what do you think about – so you like that Seattle's getting a team. That's quite obvious. But what about Sacramento? I mean
– I think there's too many teams to begin with. And to be honest, I wouldn't be averse to the idea of consolidation. Look, whenever a team leaves – there's always that hurt and anger. When Howard Schultz took Seattle to Oakland or to Oklahoma.
No. Howard Schultz
sold the
team
to Clay
Bennett,
who moved, my apologies, to move the team to Oklahoma. You know, the anger there was paramount. You know, when Now, unless it's a city where the fan threshold isn't as high, New Jersey moving to Brooklyn, other than myself and a few others, there's not that many people that were that pissed. The most recent in this is going out of sport is Atlanta, the Atlanta Thrashers moving to Winnipeg. You know, you didn't see an enormous argument over it from Atlanta.
Well, because that was the fan base. I mean, Sacramento has a good fan base. So, I mean, the question is at this point, I mean, what do you say to the fans?
What can you say to the fans? There's nothing you can say. There's nothing that's going to make it better. You know, bringing in a second team will be nice, but it's never really quite the same. You know, I mean, we have the Carolina Bobcats, Charlotte Bobcats. You know, do you think they're quite as beloved as the Hornets were? I don't think so.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you have the Cleveland Browns in football. You know, when they, you think that Cleveland team that moved to Baltimore, you think the secondary team is as beloved as the first one?
No, because the secondary team doesn't have Ray Lewis and aren't going to the Super Bowl.
That is true. But they were, you know, nor do their history books include, what's his name?
Jim Brown.
Yeah.
No, I get what you're saying. All right, we got about 10 more minutes. I just want to touch upon a little bit of college basketball, because that is where Seth comes in most handy on this show. Well, you do. I mean, you are the de facto expert of this show for college basketball. What did you think of my Cuse boys? What did you think?
I didn't really give it much thought. You beat Cincy by 2.
And we beat Louisville.
Oh, you beat Louisville.
You forgot about that.
Look, anytime you
beat Louisville
in
Louisville.
Was Ricky dressed as Colonel Sanders?
No.
Look, it's a nice win. You know, you're a top 10 team regardless. So, you know, they don't mean anything, to be honest. You know, it doesn't differentiate you from unseed, because that's going to come down to the Big East tournament. But, yeah, I mean, you follow your team more than I do. You know, I mean, the most shocking thing in college basketball this year has been the utter collapse of Kentucky. You know, in North Carolina to a lesser degree, although they dismantled my Terps on Saturday.
Wah, wah.
Well done. Sure.
But here's the question. You think Kentucky's still making the tournament?
Yeah.
Okay, so Kentucky makes the tournament. They could certainly win the whole thing, even as a low seed.
Not this team, but I understand your point. Yeah.
Well, my point is that they have the most talent in the NCAA at every position.
No, I don't know if this team really does. I think next year's team will, when the new freshmen come in. I think they have 4 of the top 7 coming in.
So you don't think this team, talent-wise, can win a tournament?
I would be surprised. I don't think this team this team is just not as talented. Nerlens Noel is not Anthony Davis. You know, Archie, what's his name? The small forward is not Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. You know, Archie Miller is not Marquise Teague. You know, it's a very talented team. I would be surprised.
Now, there is a whole lot of basketball still to be played, yes?
True.
There is a whole lot of – we've seen this in the past where teams don't perform well at the beginning of the year, do perform at the end of the year, and here we go with it. They don't go wire to wire, but they do win.
Right.
Okay. So you don't think that there could be a maturation process?
It could. There could be.
You don't think it's going to happen?
I don't think they're a championship caliber team talent-wise.
Okay.
Are you saying, do I think they could make a run to the Final Eight? Yes.
Here's my bigger question. So does this prove that John Calipari is a coach of his talent and not a good coach?
No, that's more Roy Williams to me.
So he's not a reflection of his talent, because this team –
When you're bringing in individual players every single year to the extent that Kentucky does, eventually it's not always going to work. And unlike I am, and as some of you guys know, I'm not the biggest proponent of Roy. I think Calipari recruits his recruits are obviously fantastic, but I give him a little bit more leeway. Roy Williams, to me, has, I don't even really know where to go with Roy Williams. You know, if his teams are not extraordinarily, extraordinarily talented, they don't do much. Again, great recruiter. I've never been really convinced of him as an X's and O's guy.
Well, I think that's my issue with Calipari in some ways, is that he doesn't coach up his players.
Not to the degree of other people, but again, and, you know, I have no real reason to give him more leeway, but I kind of do.
Okay. So we got 5 minutes left in the show. I'm going to go first, and we'll let, since I started the show, we'll let Seth end it. For the next, somebody, I think it was Mike Vaccaro of the Daily News quoted this. I think it was him that tweeted this. For the next 2 weeks, if you think that Tim Tebow, well, I'm sorry, compared to Ray Lewis, Tim Tebow will be a friar. And by that meaning, if you listen to Ray Lewis's post-game speech or post-game mantra, it was all about God. God willed me to do this. God willed me to do that. God had this on the team. God had that on the team. And we're only here by the grace of God. I am not one to tell people how to believe. You can believe in God. You can be an atheist and not believe in God. Perfectly acceptable to me. You can be Catholic, you can be Christian, you can be Hindu, you should be Buddhist, or none of the above, or even all of the above, if you so choose. What I have a problem with is people espousing their beliefs on television that are not designed for. If you want a Jerry Falwell show, you know to watch a Jerry Falwell show. I didn't watch football to hear Ray Lewis spouting his religious beliefs. To me, that's fanaticism. And it's not for me. There's a time and a place for that, and I don't believe that the NFL game of the week is that time. Whose fault is this? Is this the fault of CBS, who kept it on Ray Lewis while he did that? Is this the fault of Ray Lewis, who should keep his opinions to himself? I don't know. But in closing, I just have one thing to say. If you have a bad game, if Ray Lewis has a bad game, does he fault God the same way that he thanks him? Don't think so. Seth?
Guess what, everybody? Hockey's back.
Yay!
So I was kind of curious to see what the ratings were going to be. Were people going to stay away? Were they going to stay perpetually pissed like I always do? I'm just going to read this.
He's perpetually pissed about everything.
There you go. Hockey. NBC drew a massive 2.0 overnight rating for regional coverage of the Penguins and Flyers, as well as the Kings and Blackhawks, which included the Kings' banner-raising ceremony. This was the best overnight rating for a regular season NHL telecast, not counting the Winter Classic, since January 12, 2002. I don't quite get it. I don't. But hockey is back, and apparently the fans missed it. To me, I'll follow it to be knowledgeable, so when Keegan's on, I can actually sound like I know what I'm talking about. But until the playoffs, I have no reason. I feel no reason to watch. But all of these things, Pittsburgh got a 19.4 rating in their local market. Really? So anyway, I guess congrats to hockey, because apparently
hockey's back again. Then hockey's back. Obviously, there were lots of friends.
And we're done now with the singing version of the Seth and Sean show. Did you really just do that? You sick bastard. Join us next week. Hopefully, Jared Swalling will be on from ESPN. We'll do a little bit of Super Bowl preview. And, you know, check out backsportspage.com. Our radio shows, are you going to hear them on archive? You want soccer? We got Todd Stauber on Saturdays. You want hockey? You got Keegan Riga on Thursdays. You want basketball? You got Randy Zellia on Sundays. For Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, check it out.
Adios.